This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of April 7th, 2024. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 337. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. The new Sin Bin feature and the Big Deal feature. The MMA panel is back. Mario Canseco of Research Co. and Andy Yan of the Simon Fraser University City Program join me to review the good, the bad, and the ugly of 2024's first quarter. If they could be found, they would not only be in the sin bin, but in jail. I'm talking about the two gunmen, probably teenagers, that tried to kill gangster Jagraj Atwal on March 30th. It happened before 6 p.m. near a hotel on Robson Street, a few blocks west of BC Place Stadium, as Whitecaps fans were making their way to the match. The video is easy to find on the internet, and it is shocking. It is a miracle that Atwal from the Brothers Keepers gang isn't dead. It is a miracle that innocent bystanders got away unscathed. The gang war that raged in the suburbs under the cover of night has reached downtown Vancouver in broad daylight. Who is to blame for the erosion of public safety? 25 years ago, the federal Liberal government under Jean Chrétien shut down the ports police. The terminals remain an open door to organized crime, including guns and drugs. The BC NDP government had a chance to get ahead of organized crime, but 2 years ago they prematurely shut down the Cullen Commission into money laundering. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. It's the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast and time for the MMA panel. Looking at the first quarter of 2024. MMA panel includes me, Mackin. The other M is Mario, as in Mario Canseco, president of Research Co. And the A is Andy Yan, the Duke of Data, the director of the City Program at Simon Fraser University. Here we are after the first quarter of 2024. It's springtime. In 6 months, we'll be deep into the provincial election campaign, unless, of course, Premier David Eby breaks his promise, calls a snap election sooner. Back in January, start of the year, it looked like the NDP could sleepwalk to victory. Because of the war on the right, you have Kevin Falcon's BC United and John Rastad's Conservatives competing for the center-right vote, splitting the vote. EB remains popular, but the NDP has had its problems since then. It continues to have problems managing the big files, housing and healthcare. Headlines about people falling through the cracks in the healthcare system at hospitals, hospitals that aren't open 24/7, lack of doctors, lack of nurses. That's not going away anytime soon. And of course, Selena Robinson's departure from cabinet and then departure from caucus exposed deep divisions in the party, especially in the wake of the October 7th massacre and the Israel-Hamas war. First question, should the NDP be worried?
To sleepwalk into victory, perhaps it comes to a precursor of the perhaps nightmares that could come forward, that if anything, this has been the winter of our greatest discontent when it came to housing and into healthcare. And I think that's fundamentally the, I think NDP has proposed a series of solutions coming in through their bills, I guess their Bill 40X. And I think that it's interesting to see how fast effects will come out of those bills. That, I mean, certainly they were, I think, had to a certain level audacious towards their, I think, treatment of zoning and land use. But yet at the same time, I think that it's, while being audacious, it's the question of how they're going to be connected to those who are responsible towards building and developing. So I think that that's going to be a key question. But then I think that to take this all for granted, I think would be a very bad move in terms of understanding, I think really the differences in the right and how I think that that isn't doesn't necessarily equate to an easy victory.
Yeah, Mario Canseco, how have things changed since January, and how much do you think they could change in the months to come?
Well, I think the crucial aspect for the NDP is going to be trying to reconnect with voters who may not wait as long as they're at being asked to wait for the policies to kick in. And this is one of the complexities of the situation related to the election. You can always campaign in October and say, wait it out a couple of more months. We're still trying to figure out where this is going. It's particularly complicated on the healthcare file, which we know is the number one issue for people age 55 and over. But housing continues to dominate. And we really haven't seen a significantly coherent effort on the part of the other two contending parties, BC United and the BC Conservatives, to try to reduce the lead that the NDP has on that front. And I think part of the complexity here is you look at people who are dissatisfied with healthcare or with housing, and then you ask them, do you want John Rosta to handle these files? Do you want Kevin Falcon to handle these files? And they go, no, maybe not. So, you know, you do have a situation where people might be dissatisfied with the way things are going, but the opposition isn't actually doing anything to try to get voters from the NDP column to theirs. It's just a situation right now with people going from BC Liberal to BC Conservative, or going even from BC Liberal to BC NDP. So it's difficult. I think there's an opportunity for United to jump a little bit in the charts based on the power of incumbents. You know, right now there's people who don't know what BC United is, maybe don't like Kevin Falcon, but they know the one person in the riding who represents them. And it doesn't matter if the name next to theirs as a party is not BC Liberal or BC United or anything else. So I think that gives them a little bit of a competitive edge on some of the ridings where they have popular incumbents. But it's certainly not as easy as the situation that was envisioned when the BC Liberals selected Kevin Falcon. I think the biggest situation that needs to be addressed is how the party that governed under Gordon Campbell and Christy Clark without any significant issues has chosen a system to elect their leaders that has given them two dots in a row.
And here we are recording this on April 4th, not long after the NDP announced that Christine Boyle, the one city councillor from Vancouver City Council, beat former Vision Vancouver councillor Andrea Reimer for the NDP nomination to run in the Little Mountain riding, succeeding George Heyman, who held most of the riding. It's currently called Vancouver Fairview. Question here is, who do you think would benefit more from Christine Boyle going provincial, ABC, the majority party, or the NDP?
I think it's an opportunity for the NDP to connect on municipal issues. You know, in other elections, we see councillors of a center-right mentality lining up to run as BC Liberals. And we haven't seen that a lot this year. You know, there's a couple of examples. Amelia Boldby in Penticton, for instance, who's extremely popular, was the top vote getter, and now she's running for the Conservatives. But there were rumors about ABC councillors possibly running provincially, and we haven't seen that, or some of them actually running federally as well. So this allows the NDP to say, you know, we understand municipalities. Here's somebody who has experience in council and is going to help us try to figure out some issues on the housing file. I think it's a benefit to the NDP. For ABC, there's two options here. You know, people might be dissatisfied with the decisions you've taken on a wide range of issues, particularly park board. Do you sit the election out and say, you know, we'd rather for the people in Vancouver to send us somebody who's not an ABC councillor and see what we can do with it? Or you use that opportunity to promote somebody, maybe one of your park board commissioners who don't want to be park board commissioners anymore, and try to run them there. But, you know, by-elections tend to be very tricky as a forecaster of future political fortunes. The by-election that elected Hector Bremner led people to believe, including himself and his backers, that he was mayoral material. And the voters sure didn't feel that way.
ABC getting another council member probably doesn't really mean much. I mean, they already hold the vast majority on council. So, you know, with seven votes, I mean, it doesn't really add to much if they get an eighth one. And I think that that's really going to be a interesting question in terms of what happens with this towards actually what the next steps for One City might be, because One City got the endorsement of the VDLC. I think that that's going to be an interesting to watch. Now, that being said, having another voice for Vancouver in Victoria is interesting because, well, to be honest, Vancouver already has the voice that matters, right? He's called the Premier. And so in that case, it perhaps adds a certain dynamic or perhaps fortifies an element of really what this marks is perhaps a generational change within the NDP, that this is really a break, that this is a new era, perhaps for, I think that was something from another previous campaign, that this is a new era that kind of sees the break from, I think, a NDP of John Horgan to really what the NDP would look like under David Eby.
And staying at 12th and Cambie, ABC Vancouver Mayor Ken Sim and his push to abolish the park board. That was the big news headline late last year. It continued to move forward in the first quarter of 2024, not as quickly as he wanted. He may have to wait for that to be rubber stamped after the provincial election, but the NDP is agreeing with it. The First Nations are agreeing with it. It's moving forward. Meanwhile, there's problems elsewhere in EBC land, from Stanley Park logging to homeless camps around the city to violent crime downtown. And of course, the secrecy around FIFA World Cup 2026 costs. One thing that I'm noticing, though, is that unlike Gordon Campbell and Gregor Robertson, when they were mayor of Vancouver and they had majorities on city council and they had the opportunity to take time away from votes and do other things and spread their wings, unlike Gregor Robertson and Gordon Campbell, Ken Sim has not had much of a presence at Metro Vancouver. How would you rate Sim's performance early in his second year as mayor? Is it swagger or is it stagger?
Whether perhaps is stumble. Is that whether this is a stumble from issue to issue, that when it comes to the parks board, you know, how much of this actually is going to be the lighting of the beacons of a opposition that can kind of touch upon really, I think, you know, issues and concerns around local democracy, around how decision makings are made, and also the consistency of issues. What are some of the issues that really hit Vancouverites, and how does the existing ABC council make people feel like there's a difference, that is your life better now than it was 2 years ago? That I think that is really, I think, an interesting measure in terms of the kind of promises that ABC made. And yet the question is, are they delivering on the ground at this moment?
Mario?
I would have to say that it hasn't really been a particularly swaggerful few months. You know, there's a lot of dissatisfaction with specific aspects. You mentioned the FIFA issue, which is, of course, particularly complex because we've seen Toronto be significantly more open when it comes to costs and things that are going to be happening related to FIFA. And we're not getting that same type of openness and the transparency from the authorities here in Vancouver. This is happening a few months before the supposed re-election campaign for Ken Sim. So it's also problematic in that sense. And it's been an interesting change because the usual suspects on social media who blamed every single overflowing can of garbage downtown on Kennedy Stewart are no longer taking pictures of those same garbage cans and are starting to believe that it's more of a societal issue that we have crime and that we have broken windows. It's systemic. And these were the people who said we can't get anything done because Kennedy Stewart doesn't have a majority and can't get stuff done. Now you have somebody with a majority and we have the same problem. So part of where we go with this is, can you have a sustained effort on the part of the center-left parties to be better organized and mount a challenge to ABC? Right. And it's not like the NPA is going anywhere. You could conceivably arrange everything around the Greens and try to create some sort of coalition that is more of a center-left mindset. But, you know, we need to go back to 2002, to the last election, where we had a voter turnout that was higher than 50%. And this is an election that happens a year and a half after Gordon Campbell cleans house, and 2 years after Stockwell Day and the Canadian Alliance win more than 50% of the vote in British Columbia. So it's a reaction to, well, the center right and the right are gaining prominence, so we got to keep the city lefty. 2026, we might already have Prime Minister Pierre Poilievre. So it's an opportunity for the center left to say, we need to keep the city as lefty as possible. And the only way to do this is to unite. You know, we can't go back to the same type of campaign that we had the last time when you had a significant number of candidates who were running under similar values, but not under the same banner.
Right.
Maybe there's a reason why Ken Sim doesn't want to spread his wings and act as if he's mayor of Metro Vancouver because of problems with Metro Vancouver. And speaking about the big bombshell on the Friday afternoon in the middle of spring break, the Take Out the Trash Friday announcement by Jerry D'Abrovalny, the commissioner of Metro Vancouver, that the North Shore Wastewater Treatment Plant will cost close to $4 billion and not open until 2030. It was supposed to be open by now. It's supposed to cost only $700 million. So higher taxes are around the corner for people around Metro Vancouver, especially those living in North and West Vancouver, to pay for this this boondoggle. Meanwhile, there's secrecy around the cost overruns for the Patella Bridge and the Broadway Subway, which are provincial projects. But there still is federal money sloshing around in all these projects. Do you think that this will spark a campaign to finally force Metro Vancouver to become democratic, to allow direct elections in 2026?
I don't know, because I think Metro Vancouver is still abstract for many, many, many people who live here. And I think that it is, of course, one of those things where these are services that we desperately need in metropolitan Vancouver. And yet at the same time, I think with the kind of promised or suggested growth that could occur in the region, you're certainly going to need even more further services, and which was even could cost even more. And yet I think at the same time, it's an interesting kind of time for Metro Vancouver, because in one way, to kind of deal with these issues, you have to deal with them regionally. And it's not only going to be sewage and water, which certainly were the reasons why they was first formed, but when it comes to issues like transportation, it comes to issues like housing, much less affordable housing, those are issues that are distinctly regional in nature towards how they can be solved. And I think that that's one of the big challenges, is to have the people around the region to realize how important working as a region is, as opposed to small little kingdoms that are all split up around the region. So I think that it's really, of course, something that's been talked about for a long time, but the actual call to action, much less the kind of collective action that is required, I think, isn't there yet.
Mario.
Whenever I ask about amalgamation, residents of Surrey and Vancouver are like, we're all for it. You know, we would dominate. We would have a presence that is worthwhile. You move into the Tri-Cities, you move into North Van or West Van, they go, no, we don't want to amalgamate. So amalgamation, similar to what happened in Toronto and in Montreal, is probably not the thing that will happen. But part of what makes this complex is, you know, we look at people and we say, you know, here's a couple of councillors who can sit on that board, or here's a couple of representatives from this city who could be there. We're coming off an election with a dismally low voter turnout. Mm-hmm. And this is part of the complexity here. You know, Ken Sim got elected with the participation of 36% of people. And that is part of the problem. You know, if you were to say, people, your decisions on a municipal election are going to matter so much that we're going to be billions in debt with a specific project that is nowhere near opening, then people would figure it out and say, well, this is important. And one way to do that would be to actually have more accountability and elect some of these people. That would make sense. But ultimately, I think what's really disheartening about this whole exercise is politicians, federal, provincial, municipal, are always there when you're cutting the ribbons. And they let a public servant, they let him, they essentially hung him out to dry on a Friday afternoon to deliver the bad news. And you know, if this ever gets done, I hope Jerry is the one who cuts the ribbon and he's not surrounded by politicians who abandon him now when they really had to be there and explain themselves.
I mean, you know, one of the really interesting things is that we may not necessarily see elections for regional representation, but then let's look at the city of Vancouver and whether the issues of wards, or some version of wards, may be the coalescing issue towards representation in the city of Vancouver's elections. And I think that will be interesting to kind of see whether that becomes a issue that brings everyone together as a hot issue towards how Vancouver is governed and how its neighborhood should be heard or not.
Well, and it's always been one of the issues that people, when I ask about the possibility of having proportional representation for federal politics or for BC politics, people react very badly. It's like, no, I want to know who my representative is. We don't have that in the city of Vancouver or in any municipality when it comes to councillors. If your beef is with this issue, we recommend that you talk to this councillor because this councillor cares about this. So that lack of representation is also there. You know, the biggest announcement and sort of social media participation that we've seen from Vancouver councillors is related to a billboard outside of Canada Place in a situation as complex as the one that we're living in right now. Yes. So that's also part of the difficulty here. You know, you're not supposed to be a cheerleader for the city. There's a tourism commission for that.
Yeah,
it's Councillor Peter Meisner of ABC and his selfie sign, his selfie sign crusade. There are bigger issues, of course, housing and homelessness, healthcare, economy. Those issues transcend levels of government, and we're seeing some interesting mixing and remixing. Pierre Poilievre, conservative leader, of course, has really set the tone over the last year, forcing Justin Trudeau and David Eby to change gears, to spend heavily on housing, to try to do it quickly. But Trudeau and Eby are also stuck on the carbon tax, and Poilievre targeted them. Now, Trudeau, his last best hope seems to be targeting Gen Z and millennial voters, big spending promises, especially on housing, to try to turn the tide there. Meanwhile, we have the Hogue Commission on Foreign Interference casting further doubt on how the Liberals won seats in the 2019 and 2021 elections. Nothing gets easier for Justin Trudeau. Will he make it to the 2025 election?
I think he does. I don't see anything right now that leads me to believe that he's going to quit before the next election happens. I think there's an expectation that he'll get there and he'll try to fight it. I think they're going to come out hard against Poilievre, maybe not now, but in the next few months. The Farmaker gamble didn't really pay off, because what we found when we asked Canadians is everybody's got their own idea of what Farmaker has to look like. And if the medicine that you require is not on the list, then you're not going to love the PharmaCare program. And people have a very grandiose view of what this should entail and could happen. The pivot towards trying to connect with the 18 to 34-year-old demographic makes perfect sense, because what we see now is very similar to what happened in the latter stages of the Gregor Robertson days in Vancouver. Your bicycle riding, organic coffee drinker, now has a child, now has a car seat, now needs a childcare space, and now needs a larger place to live, and feels completely betrayed by the promises of the past. Suddenly the bike lane isn't doing it for this person. Yeah. And I think it's a similar situation that we're seeing, particularly with the 35 to 54 demographic. You know, we had high hopes on what Trudeau was going to do with Sony Ways and everything else. Then the situation keeps getting more complicated. Jagmeet Singh has tried to connect on this by saying that the grocers are gouging us, but it really hasn't done anything else. So trying to steer policy through is a greater advantage for Trudeau than you know, trying to counter some of the messages from Poilievre. And you know, Poilievre's messaging, the TikTok style, very quick video, looking at the screen, Kevin Falcon's trying to emulate this, but he's nowhere near the levels that are required as far as production values and actual way in which you're communicating with people. But this is the way of the future. If they think they can win a campaign by carpet bombing the airwaves on the 6 o'clock news, this is not the demographic that you're going after. And you know, part of the complexity for the Conservatives is, can you sustain this momentum? Because you don't want to be in a situation similar to the one that the Liberals and the NDP were in the first couple of years of the Mulroney tenure. You know, everything is terrible. Mulroney is responsible for my car not working. And suddenly the campaign rolls around and people start to have a second look at what you're proposing. So I think that's part of the motivation for the Liberals. You know, we'll just do some policy stuff and then people will realize that we're better than what the Conservatives are offering, but it's a dangerous game.
Right.
Andy.
I mean, it's interesting, Mario, is that if taking everything that you said and then looking at something as, I think, as simple as demographics, one of the most interesting things about demographics, and just focusing on the city of Vancouver for a bit here, is that you take a look and you break down the city by single ages. The largest number of people of a single age right now in the city of Vancouver is 31. And I think that it's interesting to kind of see that, you know, if you're a 31-year-old, you actually hold the mass of the population compared by a single age compared to any other group. And you kind of then take out those who can't vote because they're too young. And then you look at, say, those that are really, I think, in the process of trying to make their decisions on who they vote. It's interesting because I think in the United States, you've actually seen younger voters actually move to the right. And this is part of the interesting thing, is actually seeing whether being a 31-year-old, you're still, I think, kind of young, that, you know, this is still, mind you, the generation that helped bring in Justin Trudeau into office, that if they become disillusioned, and I think in one way you kind of saw that in civic politics in Vancouver, that, you know, it was Gregor Robertson and then it was Kennedy Stewart, and then just a total jump into, I think, a party that's certainly center-right, that I think that it, I think, really perhaps illustrative of really the combination of demographics and politics that really are perhaps coming into play here. And I think that there may be something that coming through this kind of campaign that we'll see a swing to the right just simply because of a kind of frustration in terms of delivery. And in that, and really in that kind of combination, the question will be, fine, you're great to campaign, but can you govern?
Oh, to be 31 again. I wish I could be. Age is just a number. And thank you again for joining us on the Breaker.News podcast. Mario Canseco, president of Research Co., and Andy Yan, the director of the City Program at Simon Fraser University, looking at the first quarter of 2024 municipally, provincially, and federally.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
In the Taiwan news, nurses jump into action to protect babies during Taiwan earthquake. Video shows nurses training and bravery to keep newborns safe during 7.2 magnitude quake. The nurses quickly moved newborn babies into the center of a room and tried to hold their cribs still as the ground shook. About 10 babies were supported by 3 nurses. The 7.2 magnitude earthquake struck Taiwan on the east coast just before 8 a.m. on April 3rd. The death toll reached 9 people on April 4th, and over 1,000 people are reported injured. In Kyoto news, South Korea plans three-way summit with Japan and China in May. The countries last held the three-way summit in December 2019. The sources said the leaders of the three Asian neighbors are likely to discuss economic cooperation and regional issues, such as North Korea's nuclear and missile threats, with South Korea and Japan hoping to prod China to use its influence over Pyongyang to address concerns related to the North. In Hong Kong Free Press, spam or scam? How unwanted phone calls from salesmen or crooks plague Hong Kongers despite countermeasures. Fraudulent calls more than doubled last year, according to an annual report released by Who's Call, the Taiwan-based counterpart of HK Junk Call. The city's police force and communications regulator stressed that phone scam cases decreased from a peak in late 2022 as a result of their efforts, but Hong Kong still recorded an overall year-on-year increase of 382 cases in 2023. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In the Oregonian, Florida woman charged in alleged wire fraud scam that siphoned $1.5 million from Portland Housing Bureau. Chantal Williams faces a 7-count indictment charging her with money laundering, conspiracy, aggravated first-degree theft, identity theft, and computer crime for playing a role in the largest theft of public funds in Portland's history. Scammers sent phony emails posing as a worker from the nonprofit Central City Concern and tricked a Housing Bureau employee into wiring the money to the wrong bank account in April 2022. In Crosscut, 50 years ago, the World's Fair helped reshape Spokane's downtown. To remember the 1974 event that drew more than 5 million people, The city will host celebrations focusing on the environment and indigenous culture. President Richard Nixon opened the Spokane Fair on May 4, 1974. It came 12 years after Seattle's 1962 World's Fair and 12 years before Vancouver's Expo 86. In The Times Colonist, first cruise ship of the year pulls into Victoria's Ogden Point. The Norwegian Bliss cruise ship, which arrived early April 3rd afternoon for a 10-hour stop, was carrying more than 4,000 passengers. This year, 315 ship visits bringing about 910,000 passengers are expected for Victoria. That's Cascadia calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. It don't matter what color you are, 'cause love will conquer hate.
Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to the Canadian Transplant Association, BC Transplant, organ donors and their families, and the doctors and nurses that perform the operations. April 7th is Green Shirt Day for Organ Donation Awareness, in memory of the late Humboldt Bronco Logan Boulay, whose organs helped save 6 lives. Go to greenshirtday.ca for more information. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of April 7th, 2024. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 7th of April in 1868, Irish-Canadian journalist and politician Thomas Darcy McGee was assassinated in Ottawa? McGee was one of Canada's Fathers of Confederation. Patrick Whelan was convicted of murder and hanged almost a year later. Now you know. Send me your feedback, send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the free email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. Or follow The Breaker News on X, formerly Twitter, for news as it happens. And you can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.